Autograph Collection Hotels offers over 300 independent hotels around the world, each exactly like nothing else. Hand-selected for their inherent craft, each hotel tells its own unique story through distinctive design and immersive experiences, from medieval falconry to volcanic wine tasting. Autograph Collection is part of the Marriott Bonvoy portfolio of over 30 hotel brands around the world. Find the unforgettable at autographcollection.com.
Hear that? It could be the sound of your phone dinging every time you sell a product with TikTok ads this holiday season. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. But you have to start now. So head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/holiday24 and drive more holiday sales today.
Evan Rail is normally a beer guy. Evan lives in the Czech Republic, which of course is famous for its beer, for its pilsners. But sometime in the late 90s, Evan got interested in this new drink. Not beer, this spirit that had suddenly appeared on the Czech scene and was taking it by storm. And in fact, the new drink wasn't new at all. It was the reappearance of a very old drink. It was absinthe.
Basically a licorice-y, minty, herbal spirit with a lot of wonderfully aromatic and fragrant spice notes or herbal notes. That's really refreshing, and it's generally green, although not necessarily green in color, and when you add water to it, it turns cloudy.
Absinthe had a big reputation. Absinthe had been banned in Europe for almost 100 years, and people associated it with the fringes of society, with counterculture artists and bad behavior and even violence. But absinthe was coming back big time.
I'd actually written an article about the absinthe trail in Switzerland and France, and how these distillers were reemerging. You know, their drink had been legalized after 95 years, roughly a full century.
What Evan learned while writing that article was that absinthe can inspire some pretty intense admiration. He met people who were collectors, who dropped serious cash on absinthe memorabilia, things like posters, glasses, even old bottles of absinthe from before the ban. To be honest, though, Evan himself wasn't that much of a convert.
It's not really my favorite drink in general. I'm curious about all kinds of drinks, but I'd sort of left absinthe behind.
Or at least that's what he thought. Years later, in 2019, Evan got a Facebook message from an absinthe expert that he had met while writing that article.
It turns out that one of his friends, one of their colleagues, had been selling forgeries. He was selling what was supposed to be historic absinthe from before the ban, but he had been selling fake bottles, they said, to other collectors and effectively just ripping them off.
This Facebook message set Evan on a mission to track down the con man. We are going to talk about that, but I was also curious about what he learned in the process about absinthe, about its history. It involves poets with bad reputations, a shocking murder, and a whole lot of bootlegging. I'm Dylan Thuris, and this is Atlas Obscura, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. And today, we're celebrating the Green Hour and going down an absinthe rabbit hole. Do you remember the first time you tried absinthe?
Well, it's been a long time, and absinthe is an alcohol, so it's fair to say that I don't remember it exactly, but I think we're close to 30 years ago. It was a good long time ago, 25 years ago or so. So you could order absinthe in a cafe, but it was served with a sugar cube that you would dip into the absinthe on a spoon and then light on fire and then stir this melted sugar into the drink to create a sweetened version of the drink.
I have to say, I haven't had absinthe very often, but I had it in exactly that circumstance in Prague, in a very corny tourist bar with this whole ceremony and like lots of other tourists around. And I too have fairly fuzzy memories of that evening.
Oh yeah, no, it's definitely it definitely makes it hard to remember. I guess I would say that's called the Bohemian ritual, and I think most experts agree that it is entirely made up. It was a marketing gimmick to sell the drink in the late 90s. It had nothing to do with the historic way people drank absinthe 100 years ago.
100 years ago, before absinthe was banned, the preferred method of drinking it was a lot less flashy. It was still cool. You would just add a splash of ice cold water, and that would transform the drink.
The oils in the alcohol combine with water in a non-stable way to create these clouds. They're really beautiful to look at, and you can kind of understand a little bit of the romance around absinthe just by looking at it, because it's not perfectly clear, it's not perfectly cloudy. It's like you're watching a storm in a teacup, only it's not a teacup, it's a strong spirit that you're about to drink.
What is also in absinthe that makes it distinct from other spirits?
It contains a chemical compound called thujone, spelled thujone, but thujone is a chemical compound that has long been thought to be dangerous. And in fact, it's still limited by the FDA in terms of how much thujone can be present in any food or drink. It's something that's controlled and regulated by the government. The drink itself has been thought to be dangerous, so much so that it has been banned in almost every country in the world, and was banned for about a century.
Why did it get this reputation for being dangerous, and why was it banned in so many countries?
Well, what happened was absinthe just became too popular. It was originally a patent medicine, if you will, the kind of spirit that you get from a doctor or a pharmacy that is meant to cure your ailing stomach, that kind of thing. And it had been started to be marketed as a commercial product in the 19th century. And it became very, very popular in France at the end of the 19th century, the Belle Époque era, as it's known. The amount of absinthe that was consumed in France, that was drunk in France, increased by 15 times between 1875 and 1913. So it went from a very obscure drink to a very, very common drink. So common that the time of day between 5 and 7 was known as l'heure verte, the green hour. It was basically happy hour, but happy hour pretty much focused on drinking absinthe at the end of the day.
Yeah, so absinthe becomes very, very popular. There's the green hour. It also becomes kind of associated with like Parisian bohemians, right? Like it gets this kind of cultural reputation.
That's right. It was the preferred drink of the artist class. A lot of impressionist painters used it, probably because it has a really nice color. In the green version, it's this kind of sickly green that you also see echoed in many of their paintings. But it was preferred by the French poets, the decadents, the writers of the late 19th century, who were, by all accounts, a wild bunch. They were people that you would not want to watch your kids or watch your cat or water your plants while you're away. You would not like them to be your neighbors. You might enjoy reading their poems, but you wouldn't trust them as far as you could throw them. And this group of wild, hard-partying poets and writers drank a lot of absinthe. We're talking about people like Charles Baudelaire, Rimbaud, Verlaine, some really great painters, Degas, Manet, Gauguin, people who had a reputation for living a life that was burning the candle at both ends, if you will.
Okay, so you've got this very popular drink, popular with kind of artist class, bohemians. What happens that really, you know, sets in motion these bans?
There's this growing movement to ban absinthe that is partly fueled by the wine industry, which had lost a lot of ground in the 19th century because of phylloxera. That's a disease that destroys wine grapes. But as it came back, after they recovered from the phylloxera epidemic in the mid-19th century, the wine industry comes back and it really wants its customers back. So it starts out by trying to demonize absinthe. But then what happens is there's this kind of famous murder. A guy named Jean Lanfray in Switzerland murders his wife and family after drinking absinthe, as well as a bunch of wine and cognac. And the reports about this murder sensationalize everything. They're in every newspaper in Europe. They're the main headline story about this horrific murder. But they tend to overlook the fact that he drank several liters of wine. And they instead say he drank absinthe and that's why he did it.
The Lanfray murders gave the anti-absinthe crowd the push they needed to ban the drink. And by 1915, absinthe was banned in Switzerland, in France, the US, Brazil, the Netherlands, and across much of Europe. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, absinthe goes underground.
As long as there was a ban, they were making absinthe illegally. They were called clandestin. They were clandestine, if you will.
That's after this. Autograph Collection Hotels offers over 300 independent hotels around the world, each exactly like nothing else. Hand-selected for their inherent craft, each hotel tells its own unique story through distinctive design and immersive experiences, from medieval falconry to volcanic wine tasting. Autograph Collection is part of the Marriott Bonvoy portfolio of over 30 hotel brands around the world. Find the unforgettable at autographcollection.com.
How weird does it feel to be called someone's fiance? The first time you hear it, you do a double take. From there, let's enjoy this moment, turns into we're planning a fall wedding. That's where Zola comes in. From a venue and vendor discovery tool that matches you with your dream team to save the dates, websites, and an easy-to-use registry, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
Just because something gets banned, as we know, just because something is made illegal, does not mean people stop finding ways to make it. It sounds like you traveled to an area in Switzerland that was known for absinthe bootlegging. Can you talk a little bit about that town?
Yeah, it's a small valley, actually, known as the Val de Travers. It's outside of Neuchâtel, and it's the westernmost part of Switzerland. It kind of runs up right against the French border in the Alps or the Jura area. This is the homeland of absinthe. This is the place where the drink was first invented at the end of the 18th century, long before Gay Paris and all of the Belle Epoque glories of absinthe. And this is the place where the drink never disappeared. You know, as long as there was a ban, they were making absinthe illegally. They were called clandestin. They were clandestine, if you will. They would produce absinthe and maybe label it as machine oil for external use only. Or they would disguise it in a can of carrots. The bootleggers would put absinthe into cans and they would have a label on the outside that would say carrots or peas or some kind of vegetable or something like that. But then there would be a little wry joke in there somewhere, some kind of knowing line maybe that would let the would-be customer know that this wasn't actually carrots or peas, but this was an illicit beverage. This was an illicit drink, something illegal that they weren't supposed to have. There was a story about one bootlegger. He drove the town's first ambulance, but he was a bootlegger. And he would turn on the sirens of his ambulance and drive around past the police, past the security controls and the checks, wave at the police from his ambulance on his way to deliver bootleg absinthe.
So this is how things went for about 75 years. And then in the 1990s, a very clever British importer of Czech beer stumbled upon a legal loophole. The loophole meant that absinthe could actually be produced in the Czech Republic, because as it turned out, absinthe had never actually been banned there.
What happened is that the drink was legal to produce in the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic was about to join the EU. By the laws of the EU, when something is legal to make in one country, it's legal to make and sell in another country. So people figured this out and they started importing to the UK or exporting from the Czech Republic, Czech-made absinthe. It creates a lot of interest in the drink, and you start seeing the drink showing up in Dracula movies and so forth, because there's this mystery and romance about absinthe, and people are fascinated by this beverage that's supposed to make you go crazy or supposed to make you hallucinate. It's connected to a historic murder. It's been banned for almost a century. And as the interest grows, you start seeing the Swiss distillers pushing for legalization, because they're seeing that this drink is becoming known in Europe, and they're the makers, they're the people who invented it, and it should be legal there. And then that starts to happen as well in France, and the French distillers, so they actually have to petition their government to change the laws and get rid of this prohibition on a specific drink that's lasted most of a century.
But just because you could now get some new, freshly made legal absinthe, it didn't mean people didn't want the old stuff. In fact, the rise of absinthe helped create a thriving market for pre-ban vintage absinthe, the stuff made before the laws, the old stuff, the good stuff.
So people started hunting down these old 100-year-old bottles of absinthe. Predominantly, this was a group of collectors, specialists, and they were very much underground. They were in secret groups, not really part of the outside world. You couldn't go into a bar anywhere and buy a 100-year-old bottle of absinthe. But if you knew the right person, a collector, a specialist who dealt in these drinks, you could find many of these old brands. You can taste the same spirit that one of your literary heroes drank.
Have you yourself been able to try any pre-ban absinthe?
I've had about 10 pre-ban absinthes. Authentic ones handed to me by, for example, the owner of a distillery in France, took it out of the archives and handed me a glass that I got to sip. I have to say, this was one of the greatest drinking experiences of my life. Being able to drink pre-ban absinthe is like touching history. It's like it's a time machine that just zaps you back 120 years instantly. When you drink a new absinthe, it has sharp elbows. It has sharp flavors. It hits you. It strikes you. Some of the tastes are out of balance. One distiller said that it's wild. A modern absinthe is just kind of wild tasting. And with time, these absinthes, well, they're tamed a little bit. They're not as robust, or they're not as crazy, wild in flavor. And they're a lot more demure. The tastes are harmonious in a way that the modern absinthes often aren't.
This is the context in which you get a message in 2019 about someone who is selling pre-ban absinthe that perhaps is a little bit suspicious.
Well, what happened was that a group of absinthe fans, collectors, connoisseurs, started getting a little suspicious. To start, he was finding too many rare bottles. Now, there are rare bottles, and I can tell you, pre-ban absinthe bottles surface every month. I just found one online sold by an auction house, a reputable auction house, you know, just last month it was being sold. Sometimes you see a lot of six of them. There are various bottles that show up. But he was finding the most obscure gems, the rarest of rarities, things that no one had ever seen. And he was trying to tell a group of aficionados, they call themselves absinthers, that he was finding these rarities that they had never seen in 20 or 30 years of collecting. So what they eventually came around to was that this counterfeiter, this absinthe forger, was buying historic bottles empty and filling them with modern absinthe and then adding a little bit of flavoring to make it just a little bit harder to tell. He was camouflaging the modern absinthe that he was putting into these historic bottles enough to fool a lot of people.
I'm curious, you mentioned that absinthe isn't, you know, your favorite beat or even your favorite drink. Did working on this book make you more of an absinthe drinker?
Oh, it made me fall in love with absinthe again. I started out by saying, you know, that absinthe wasn't my favorite drink, but I've actually come to just love it. I think it is a remarkable beverage. It's got so much mystery and romance around it, but it also just tastes really good. But it's worth noting that absinthe is becoming something else as well. Absinthe is changing. Absinthe used to be only green, or almost only green. There were a few of what is called blue absinthe bleu, around. But nowadays, in the Val de Travers especially, that is the predominant style, is absinthe bleu. That is a spirit that is essentially just perfectly clear. It has no green coloring at all. So it looks like gin or vodka. And there are also new versions of absinthe that are being created. There are oak-aged versions and different spirits being used as the base. So it's not just a museum piece. You know, it's becoming something else as well. It's turning into something new. And I think that's great because it shows that the culture is alive, vibrant, and it is developing, and it is not just dead history.
Oh man, you're making, I mean, it's morning right now, but you're making me want absinthe. This is what a great topic, what a great story, and yeah, and what a romantic drink. I'm not sure I can think of a spirit that has more vibe to it than absinthe does.
It really is a drink unto itself.
We've been talking to Evan Rail. His new book is called The Absinthe Forger, a true story of deception, betrayal, and the world's most dangerous spirit. It's out now. It's really fun. And go get yourself a little drink of absinthe while you're at it.
This episode was produced by Amanda McGowan. Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. The people who make our show include Doug Baldinger, Chris Naka, Camille Stanley, Johanna Mayer, Manolo Morales, Baudelaire, Gabby Gladden, Amanda McGowan, Alexa Lim, Casey Holford, and Luce Fleming. Our theme music is by Sam Tyndall. And if you like the show, please, please give us a review and rating wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, you know, like, subscribe, follow. Never miss an episode. I'm Dylan Thuris, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I'll see you next time.
You hear that? That's the sound of instant relief from nasal congestion by the number one best-selling nasal strip brand in the world. Breathe Right. Breathe Right's drug-free, flexible, spring-like bands physically open your nose for increased airflow, allowing you to breathe easier, one breath at a time. We may not be able to put the feeling of instant relief into words, but believe us, you'll be able to feel it. Try us for free today at BreatheRight.com.
With an hour before boarding, there's only one place to go, the Chase Sapphire Lounge by the club. There, you can recharge before the big adventure. Or enjoy a locally inspired dish. You could recline in a comfy chair to catch up on your favorite show. Or order a craft cocktail at the bar. Whatever you're in the mood for, find the detail that moves you with curated touches at the Chase Sapphire Lounge by the club. Chase, make more of what's yours. Learn more at chase.com/sapphire reserve.
Cards issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC. Subject to credit approval.